Oral Tradition Talking Books, a division of Doaya Media Publishing, presents Scars, A Story from the Paradigm Void by Ayapo Yapa, read by the author. I look up the word playboy in a dictionary, and beside it, you'll find a picture of Kenderson Clark. In a thesaurus, find Kenderson Clark, and the synonyms would be money, power, greed, wealth, and hoarding. Clark, after 8 long years of waiting tables and washing windows, graduated from Yale University with a master's degree in business at the ripe old age of 25. 6 years later, and he earned the title of founder and president of Clark Industries, a multinational conglomerate with properties and stocks and raw materials in 3 foreign countries and over half the United States. Clark redefined the phrase self-made man. He built his fortune with 100,000 borrowed dollars, becoming one of the most powerful and influential businessmen in the world. Making it to the top is not a matter of simply hard work and good decisions. Clark would often say, "It's not enough that one wins. Everyone else has to lose. Take no prisoners." Such was his life philosophy. Clark finally drifted off to sleep around 1:30 a.m. when the phone rang. He'd been in a deep sleep about 20 minutes. He fumbled around in the dark for a couple seconds. After finding the phone, he sat up in his bed without raising the receiver. Never wanting to sound like he was not totally in control, he gave himself a moment to shake off the remnants of his slumber before answering the phone.
"Clark,"
he said as unemotionally as possible. On the other end of the line was the oh-so-familiar, unmistakable voice of Clark's latest conquest, a young model named Astrid Claire, whom he'd met at a spot called the Las Vegas Club while on a business trip to Brussels, Belgium. Originally from Amsterdam, she had been living in the United States for the past 8 months, just to be close to Kenderson.
"Ken, did I wake you? I've not seen you for more than a week."
"I know that, Austin. I've been extremely busy in the past week or so. I haven't had time to think about much else but the company." Clark took care to make sure that his voice stayed in even tones.
"You could not have taken the time to come and see me once, Kenderson? I find that hard to believe. You say that you love me and that you want to marry me, but you refuse to steal a moment to spend with me. Unless, of course, you want to make love."
"What do you want from me, Astrid? I'm a businessman, and I have corporations to worry about." Clark had by now turned on the light beside the bed. He looked in the mirror on the adjacent wall and grinned at himself, proud of the fact that he'd made his last statement with an almost total lack of emotion.
"I don't understand. Why do you say that you love me, but you put everything ahead of me?"
"Look, sweetheart, I have a meeting coming up at 7 o'clock and I'm really tired. Why don't I give you a call sometime this afternoon?"
"You're not going to call me?"
"Sure I will, honey, but I've got to go right now, okay?"
"But we need to talk about our relationship."
"I'll talk to you this afternoon, kid. Ciao." There was a click and then a dial tone. The morning meetings had gone exactly as Clark had wanted them to, with him in total control. He now sat in his office, scanning the necessary documents for a hostile takeover that he'd been planning for some months. Suddenly, the large door to his office flew open. In spite of himself, Clark jumped slightly in his seat as he watched Philip Murphy storming into his private space. Immediately behind Murphy, Clark's personal secretary, Donna Johnston, rushed in making massive apologies.
"I am so sorry, sir. So help me, Mr. Clark. I tried to stop Mr. Murphy from coming in, but he just shoved me to the side."
She paused for a moment to try to catch her breath and regain her composure.
"Would you like for me to call security and have him escorted out, sir?"
Murphy, who had been looking at Clark from the moment that he entered the room, quickly shot a gaze over to the hapless secretary. Within a split second, Donna recalled every story she'd ever heard about every disgruntled employee who had ever gone on a murderous rampage, and she froze. "That won't be necessary, Donna," Clark said in an annoyingly calm tone. Actually, he was slightly upset by the fact that he'd allowed himself to be startled. He'd have to remember to get a remote control lock for that door. Evidently, Philip has some things that he wishes to say, and far be it from me to deny a man his constitutional rights. He looked at Murphy. "Isn't that right, Philip?" Philip remained silent, his eyes narrowing. Donna backed cautiously out the office without turning around and without letting her eyes leave Murphy. Perhaps she was afraid that Mr. Murphy was going to suddenly go ballistic. The door closed slowly, with her on the other side. "Now then, what can I do for you, Philip?" "My wife told me that you two had an affair." "Are you making a statement or asking a question?" "Did you have an affair with my wife?" Murphy forced out in the most controlled voice that he could manage. Clark snickered. "I would hardly call one roll in the hay an affair." "Then you did sleep with my wife," Murphy shouted, now losing his temper and not caring who heard him. "Just tell me one thing, Clark. Why? Why did you sleep with Elaine? I thought that you were engaged to that Italian girl."
"French."
"What the fuck ever? Why couldn't you leave my wife alone?"
"Philip," Clark said with mock concern in his voice, "let's not be so emotional. Why don't you just have a seat and we can discuss—
I don't want to sit down. I want you to tell me why you felt the need to get my wife in bed."
By this time, Murphy was yelling loudly and turning quite red indeed. Kenderson was, of course, getting extreme pleasure out of the entire episode. The billionaire adjusted his position in his already comfortable chair, folded his hands over his stomach, and rocked a bit as he began to speak. "Elaine is a very beautiful and sensitive woman, Philip. Last year, at the company Christmas party, I made several advances, but a happy wife makes for an almost impossible target. However, I am used to getting what I want. This sometimes becomes a little game with me, at any rate. While reviewing office security videos, I started hearing stories through the office scuttlebutt about your wife's growing dissatisfaction with her marriage. Therefore, I did what any man worth his salt would have done." Clark grinned widely. "I took advantage of her." Clark paused for a moment as to fully savor tormenting the man who stood before him. A dissatisfied wife may as well hang a big sign around her neck that says, "Come and get it." When I found out how things were, I decided to go to her. I thought I was the best man to comfort her. And as it was, I comforted her right onto her back.
"Is that all my wife was to you? A target? A conquest? Don't you feel anything for anyone?"
Murphy's voice was now almost calm. The lackadaisical and unaffected attitude that Clark showed toward others and their pain left Murphy with a sense of amazement that caused him to momentarily forget his anger. "What exactly do you want from me, Philip? An apology? Let me tell you something, Philip. I'm not a man given to making apologies or excuses for my actions. You see, I stand firmly on the belief that people do exactly what they want. There are two choices to be made in any given situation. Either decide that the price to be paid is too steep and leave it alone, or decide that you're willing to deal with the consequences of your actions and do what you wish. Your wife chose the latter. Now she must deal with it, whether it means the end of your marriage, the loss of trust between you, or whatever. I don't know what the two of you are going through, and to be perfectly frank with you, Phil, I could not possibly care less."
"What about your consequences?"
"I don't have to deal with the consequences of my actions. I'm wealthy." The smug grin that had become more or less a permanent fixture on Clark's face was becoming profoundly annoying to Mr. Murphy. It's true that Elaine and I were having a few problems, but she would never cheat on me without some kind of outside interference. You and your game playing and smooth talk have to have done it. My wife loves me! Yes, I do vaguely remember her mentioning something about still being in love with you. However, I guess it must have slipped my mind while I was screwing her brains out in your bed. Oh, and you have a very nice bedroom, by the way. Though I think that the sheer drapes around the canopy were a bit much. You son of a bitch, I'll kill you! Clark, still grinning, opened his center desk drawer, reached in, produced a large silver gun, and sat the weapon in front of him on the desk. And he made a gesture with his hands. You want to kill me, Philip? Here, use my gun. Murphy wasted no time getting to the desk and grabbing the revolver. He aimed it directly at Kenderson's head and cocked the hammer back. The gun was shaking as beads of sweat appeared on the brow of the betrayed husband. Clark pulled out the paperwork that he'd been studying and didn't bother to look up. Now, Philip, he said, still looking down at the documents on his desk, if you're going to pull the trigger, then pull it. If not, I'm a very busy man and my time is valuable. Murphy held the gun for 1 minute more and after disabling it, slammed it down on the black desk with a loud thud. Kenderson, however, did not budge nor look up. As Murphy turned and walked slowly to the door, Clark said politely, I take it you know that this means you're fired. Philip stood there for a moment with his hand on the doorknob. You've been cheated on and betrayed by your wife. I've just fired you and there's nothing you can do about it but be hurt. There's no way for you to get any revenge or satisfaction of any kind. It must feel horrible. I can just imagine. Clark paused purposely for effect. No, on second thought, I guess I can't imagine. Philip opened the door slowly and walked out. Give my best to Elaine! Clark yelled just before the door closed. As Philip Murphy walked away, he could hear muffled laughter from the other side of the door. Clark sat down at his perpetually reserved table in the Elite Room restaurant and waited for the sommelier to come with the wine list. He glanced at his watch and then around the room. He took note of all the unattractive people sitting and eating, laughing, flirting. I never realized how many flaws people have on their faces, Clark said out loud to himself. He was immediately pleased by the prospect of seeing Astrid. Now that was a face. Astrid appeared at the podium of the maitre d'. She was striking. Over her perfectly shaped, nearly 6 foot athletic frame, she wore a flowing black dress that could have been an evening gown, but was noticeably made for a more casual afternoon atmosphere. Her skin was a smooth dark chocolate, and her features were classically Egyptian. Nubian Egyptian, not Liz Taylor Egyptian, which was accentuated by the combination of dimples and a shallow cleft in her chin. She was every man's dream and every woman's nightmare.
I'll be joining Kenderson Clark for dinner,
she said with an accent that fit her perfectly. Upon hearing it, there would be no way to imagine this goddess having any other voice. Despite having served as maitre d' at the restaurant for several years, Clouseau, having oddly never met Astrid before, was so taken aback by her beauty that he'd forgotten for a moment where he was and what he was doing.
Kenderson Clark?
She said again, this time more insistently, but nonetheless softly and politely. Clouseau came to himself and jumped as if stuck in the rear with a hat pin.
Forgive me, madam, he stuttered. Mr. Clark is right this way.
He grabbed the menu and led Astrid to Kenderson's table. After Astrid was seated, she simply stared at Clark without uttering so much as a hello. Clark didn't mind, but he knew that she was waiting for him to speak first. You are without any question the most beautiful woman I've ever laid eyes on.
Kenderson said in a disarmingly charming voice, and with a smile that could melt a brick. Ostrey, somehow fighting her first reaction to smile and say, "Thank you," simply sighed and tilted her head slightly to the right. Kenderson took a sip of his wine and said, "I see you're not going to make this easy for me, sweetheart."
"Then why should I?"
Ostrey blurted out so suddenly that she startled herself.
"You treat me as if I'm some secondary part of your life that you can do without. As if I'm just an afterthought."
"Now, Ostrey, you know that's not true. You mean the world to me, and I want us to be together."
"Oh, you do. Well, you have a funny way of showing it, Candace."
"Let's have dinner and talk about this, okay? I really want things to be right between us, darling." Hesitantly, Ostrey nodded. Clark had no intention whatsoever of discussing the concerns of his dinner companion. Instead, he opted for a technique that he often used when handling business ventures and speaking with possible partners, buyers, or sellers. He continuously steered the subject back to what he wanted to talk about and obfuscate until there was little, if any, memory of what the actual conversation was supposed to have been about. And so it was with this conversation. Kenderson and Ostrey both had filet of sole and creme brulee. They talked and laughed in the way they did when they first got together. Kenderson could be devastatingly charming when he wanted to be. Ostrey was once again at ease, and later they went back to Kenderson's place for a second dessert. Kenderson genuinely enjoyed making love to Ostrey more than any other woman that he had ever made love to before. Ostrey Claire was a beautiful woman, and she was totally willing to please her future husband in any conceivable way. And of course, Kenderson saw to it that she did. After hours of foreplay, making love, cuddling, and more lovemaking, Clark laid on his back, hands behind his head, and squinted as he stared in the darkness at the ceiling, studying the designs of the Sistine Chapel-type paintings. Ostrey moved close to Clark, putting her hand on his shoulder, and started rubbing his chest.
"I love you, Ken,"
she whispered breathlessly.
"I will be glad when we're finally married. The first thing that I'm going to do is..."
"I don't think that we should get married, Ostrey," Clark said abruptly.
"What?"
"I said, I don't think that we should get married. I'm just not ready for it."
"What are you talking about, Kenderson? In the restaurant, that's all we talked about."
"No, Ostrey, that's all you talked about. I simply said that I enjoyed being with you and I liked spending time with you. I'm not so sure that that means getting married. Actually, I've been thinking that I don't believe we should even be seeing each other at all anymore."
"I cannot believe what I'm hearing,"
Ostrey said as she sat up quickly on the bed.
"We see each other for years. Then tonight you give me wine and dinner, sweet talk me, then bring me back here to make love for hours? And then tell me something like this?"
"Ostrey, we're both adults here. Sometimes things work out, sometimes they don't. In this case, they didn't. There's no need to be sitting here getting all upset."
"No need to get upset?"
Ostrey turned around on the bed and tried to slap Clark on the cheek, but only managed to graze his shoulder in the darkness. "That's not very nice," Clark smirked. "I thought you said you loved me. And here you go trying to hit me." Clark grabbed Ostrey's arms and with one rough jerk pulled her down onto the bed. He rolled over on top of her and pinned her arms to the side. Ostrey struggled violently to break the grasp of the stranger who was now on top of her.
"Let me go,"
she said, more out of anger than in distress. "Oh, I'll let you go, sweetheart, when I'm finished with you."
"You are finished with me, Kenderson, just as I'm finished with you,"
Ostrey snarled in a voice that was uncharacteristically venomous. Clark attempted to force his body inside that of the young model, who was struggling beneath him, but Ostrey was having no part of it. Her adrenaline had kicked in. She was able to raise the attempted rapist off her, and she delivered a solid kick to his exposed testicles for good measure. Clark turned over, writhing in pain, both hands firmly between his legs. Astrid immediately rolled off the bed, grabbed her clothes in the darkness, and hurriedly started dressing, not caring whether the garments might have been inside out or not, or put on backward.
I never knew you, you bastard. How many women have you done this to? How many weren't able to kick you between the legs and get you off them?
Once dressed, Astrid stared intensely for a moment at the man who was still grunting and rolling from side to side on the bed. It was obvious that for him, the pain was starting to subside, but she continued to look at him. Astrid realized she was paralyzed, no longer looking upon the man before her as the outer shell with whom she'd become acquainted, but that she was seeing the actual spirit within him. Astrid could not understand why this was happening. In that moment, she was both fascinated with and frightened by what she was seeing. She had no way of knowing how long she stood frozen, peering into this man's deepest soul, along with the paralysis, along with any fear she may have had of him, passed.
Whom you fucking kicked me in the balls, you bitch?
Kenderson finally managed to say.
What the fuck are you staring at?
Kenderson Clark, you're a cruel and heartless man,
Osiris said calmly in the darkness.
You seek to hurt and control people, like you tried to do with me just now. It wasn't just me you were attempting to rape, Kenderson. It was this world, everyone and everything in it. It is not the way of our people. But I suppose it's because you are so close to the poisonous value system of those who oppress us. It has become your way. You have no regard for anyone but yourself. Tell me, Kenderson. How many people have you hurt?
Clark glared at her and said nothing.
Of course you will not answer. But know this, your day is coming, and you will see that you can't just harm and hurt other people. These are scars, Kenderson. These are scars of the soul that usually none can see, but God. It would do you well to have such power because you, Kenderson, has scarred many people for your fate. I'm almost sorry for you.
Kenderson said nothing. Astrid finished putting on and adjusting her clothes. She walked slowly to the bedroom door. She stood with her back to Clark for a moment and then said, without turning around,
for what is about to come upon you, Kenderson Clark, I almost feel sorry for you.
She opened the door and stepped to the other side of it.
Almost.
When she closed the door, she was gone into the darkness as if she never existed in the life of Kenderson Clark.
This has been an excerpt from the audio version of the story Scars from the book Paradigm Void by Ayapo Yapa. We at Oral Tradition Talking Books hope that you enjoyed this excerpt and that you'll check out all that we have to offer at doayamedia.com. We have written works by Ayapo Yapa and by Angela Riley. They're available for sale on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, with more to come. So here's wishing you all peace, and thank you for listening.